Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. Today we have yet another episode of My Obsession. You may be wondering, where is John Miscavige? The search is still on for him. As far as we know, he is still dead, or, you know, kidnapped by Stephen Sondheim. Finally, it finally happened. In the meantime, we have Mr. Kevin Duda in the studio, quote unquote, today. Hi, Kevin. Say hi to fans.
Hi, fan.
Asshole. Kevin Duda is here to take part in our second episode of My Obsession. He has been on Broadway a couple of times. You might have seen him throughout the entire run of Les Liaisons Dangereuses.
Yes.
Through the first year and a half of Book of Mormon. First 2 years of Book of Mormon. And then, honestly, on any given Sunday, beautiful.
Correct. Actually, almost three on Mormon.
Almost three on Mormon.
Yeah, because we opened in 2011, and then I was there through end of 2013.
That's a great story. So, otherwise...
Wait, that's 2 years, isn't
or
it?
Or you saw him...
No, that's almost three. It's almost three.
Or you saw him touring the country with Eartha Kitt in Cinderella. Or you saw him on the interwebs on my web series.
Baking it on Broadway.
Yes, R.I.P. It's
where
sad.
Where is... Sherry?
Sherry?
Charlotte?
Oh, Sherry. No.
What was the name of your...
Shelly. Shelly the oven. We still have her. She's right there.
Hi, Shelly.
So when I say studio, I mean we're in my apartment.
Hey, y'all.
That I share with my straight husband, Tyler Milliron. And I've taken a bunch...
Is it Milliron?
Milliron.
I always call him Milliron.
I mean, I just call him asshole. But there we go.
People are like, who did your headshots? And I'm like, Tyler Milliron.
Tyler Milliron.
Maybe that's why he's not getting any business.
Did Tyler do your headshots?
Yeah.
I did not know these things.
He did my headshots after Baking It on Broadway.
Tyler, stop interfering in my life. He's somewhere in this apartment right now. But I did take a bunch of sound cushions and put them around us. And it's very homey. We've got my Harry Potter on the table. And it's just a nice little homey little studio we made.
It feels like a podcast tent or like a podcast camp.
Sure. So, Kevin, let's just get into the nitty gritty because you and I could talk about Broadway forever.
Correct.
So I'm not going to poke the bear about other stuff. I'm just going to get right into the nitty gritty. What is your obsession for today?
Harry Potter. No, I'm just kidding. It's just right here. My obsession right now is this kind of, and it's not really one item, but it's this pervasive energy that happens every few years on Broadway where we complain that Broadway is going in one direction or things are going in one direction. Like we're going to be all we're going to be all jukebox, or we're going to be all like new, or we're going to be all so many plays. And and mostly I say this because it just drives me nuts because no one looks past to the future. You know what I mean? Like this happens all the time.
Yeah.
This is like a thing, and it just drives me crazy because what it does is it creates this it creates a negative energy around all of the possible potential projects that could be happening and don't, because we're obsessed with the fact that Broadway is all movie musical adaptations.
So your obsession today is negative mob mentality?
Correct.
Great.
Correct. I love that you were trying to figure that out the whole time.
I'm trying to how do we word this?
I'm mostly obsessed with the fact that we keep that, as cyclical as Broadway is, the feeling that Broadway is failing and theater's failing is also cyclical.
Sure. Have you... I don't know why I'm asking this. You have seen Broadway, The Golden Age.
Yes, of course.
Okay. I know.
Yes.
I'm going from here on out. I'm not going to ask. I'm going to tell. I'm
gonna just assume. I think I donated to Broadway the Golden Age, like maybe the third installation that's never going to happen because he passed away.
He did. Although apparently the second one is done, and
that's what I've heard.
Yeah, and they just aren't ever releasing it. That was a shame. Point is, Al Hirschfeld says in Broadway the Golden Age, and this documentary, which those of you who don't know it, I don't know how you're listening to this podcast and not know what Broadway the Golden Age is. We have a couple of younger fans who are, you know, God bless them, trying to learn more, but they're very like Newsies, Be More Chill.
Yes, that yes, era. Yes. But where can you find it? I mean, where is it? Like, is it on iTunes or like?
I think you can buy it or rent it on iTunes.
Okay,
you can definitely buy the DVD. I have the DVD. It is a documentary that came out in 2004 with a bunch of actors, writers, directors, what have you, that were around for what was considered the golden age of Broadway,
mm-hmm.
which is unofficially like 1940 to 1968, something like that.
Right.
And Al Hirschfeld says in it, I've been hearing that Broadway's dying literally since I've been wearing pants.
Right.
When Oklahoma opened, which led into West Side Story, there was a Al Hirschfeld illustration that was representing audiences going, oh, well, now all musicals are going to be serious. Like, right. like Broadway's
right.
dying.
Right.
So yeah, we as audience members always, because we can't predict the future, we're just always just assuming that it's going to die.
Right. No, I think it's, I'm certainly not like, you know, Jerry Vicky. I'm not like the, you know, like 86 years old and like, you know, I'm not speaking from like having done Broadway for 85 years.
Although you are close.
Let's change my obsession. My obsession is with this gun that I'm holding right now. But it's this mob mentality that, like, you know, I mean, it's like, let's talk about Be More Chill, because I think it's fantastic that a show has come to Broadway with that energy and sure. for that reasoning. I don't know the show at all, so I can say that outright. I have no comment on the actual show itself. But what drives me crazy is that, this is this generation's new Rent, but Rent was there because of Superstar, and Superstar was there because of there's always going to be one.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it comes back around, but it's not better or worse than anyone that came around 10 years ago for that generation, because we are in this cyclical, let's break the boundaries, let's do something different. Like, we're always trying to push boundaries. And if we're always trying to push boundaries, at some point the boundaries are going to be broken, but the device is going to be the same.
Yes. Agree. Let's pivot, though. No,
Yes, Kellyanne.
Yes, Kellyanne. I agree with you in terms of that. I hear what you're saying, because I will. It does feel like right now with this season, we were very spoiled for like three seasons where we had the season of Fun Home and Something Rotten and The Visit and
right,
overflowing. And then we had Hamilton and
right.
School of Rock and Waitress and Shuffle Along, and then we had Dear Evan Hansen and Great Comet and right. Groundhog Day. And this, and then the last years have been a lot of movie adaptations and a lot of jukebox musicals. So it feels like, oh, this is where Broadway's heading. But as you said, it's a cycle. Broadway kind of goes in
it goes in waves.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes in waves. And it also, like, you have to, you if you want to look at like what is the next cycle, just look to regional, look to what's in the development. I mean, if you're not getting the Broadway briefing and looking at studying like all those shows that are in development, mm-hmm. you know, then you don't know what's really actually coming next. And some, there are some things that will surprise you, like, mm-hmm. you know, Hadestown took a crazy, not crazy, but a different route to come into Broadway. You
yeah.
know, they were in...
they did the Spider-Woman route.
They did the Spider-Woman, right, exactly.
I'm so gay.
You are so gay. Which,
the Spider-Woman route, for those of you who don't know, it's where you do something in New York, and then you go to London. And then you come back. Yeah.
Well, actually, I mean, in a way, like, Be More Chill did off-Broadway, and then it did regional for... And in the CD, right? Like,
no, they did regional.
They did New Jersey.
They did regional, yeah, in Jersey. And then they did an album.
Right.
And the album, like, blew up. And then it got produced in random places.
Right.
And now, then
probably mostly high school. Probably mostly, right? Mostly high school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember, what was it? Next to Normal. Was it Next to Normal? Yeah, Next to Normal. Everybody was really...
Second stage.
Yeah, they did second stage, and then I think they went to Arena, and then they came to Broadway.
It was the Dear Evan Hansen route.
Yeah.
It was the exact Dear Evan Hansen
route. No, Dear Evan Hansen reversed it. Dear Evan Hansen did Arena, then second stage, then Broadway.
Did they?
Yeah, that I know, because I saw Dear Evan Hansen at Arena stage.
Okay.
In a half-empty theater. Oh, they hadn't even opened yet.
Oops.
And I think about it to this day. I'm like, it doesn't matter where you come from. You can be a huge hit even if your theater is half full.
That's right.
Week of previews.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And for every Dear Evan Hansen, there's going to be two, like, you know, there's going to be the Summer Musical and the Cher Musical, which are also, you know, those are unfair comparisons. I should use different comparisons because Dear Evan Hansen is very commercial, just like Cher and Summer are very commercial.
Sure.
But they're commercial for different reasons.
Broadway is a commercial venture. It's supposed to be the intersection of art and commerce.
Sure.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Sort of.
I mean,
more commerce than art, usually.
Well, you know, with finances for Broadway being what they are, producers and investors are not taking as many risks. And there are also fewer shows produced every year.
Right.
So we can't really take... in a normal season in the 40s, you would have like 40, 50 pieces produced.
Right. And also when you're opening a Broadway show, you're opening an art gallery and you're asking everyone who is, you're asking multi-generational to come to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because no Broadway show can survive on just the tween market or
mm-hmm.
just the, you know, look at, like, you know, Legally Blonde lasted as it did, as far as it did, because it pretty much eked out all of the tween, teen, 20s,
yeah.
early 30s, and by that time that was done, it closed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas something like Chicago has multi-generational, multi-ethnic,
mm-hmm.
multilingual, appeal, which is why it's still here. So opening a Broadway show is like opening an art gallery and asking everyone to come and appreciate it for a price.
So with this mentality, why is it your obsession? Like, what about it?
It drives
keeps
me,
you up at night.
It's because we never learn from it. It's because we keep continuing to be back at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really bugs me that, you know, I visit the message boards every now and then, and you know, but here's what I'll say about that is it's a healthy unhealthy obsession.
Sure.
Not an obsession. It's a healthy unhealthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I have carved out the people that I agree with and the people that I usually don't agree with. And
mm-hmm.
and I don't do that in a good or bad environment. I do that because the people that I agree with are the ones that have thoughtful things to say and probably things that I would say as well. I don't ever post there. I'm not a poster. I'd have nothing to do with them.
If everyone knows my history with that message board, I used to post.
Okay.
Back in my younger days.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't posted in years.
Mm-hmm.
I still read it because for the most part I find it just so fucking entertaining.
I mean, it's kind of like Us Weekly for Broadway, right?
Yeah,
like,
well,
it's like
the on it's as you said, like, there's I carve out posters by who I find to be more informed than others.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
which is fun, like
reference
Lord,
points.
Exactly. Lord knows when I was 14 I didn't know everything about the inner workings
sure.
of Broadway, but I
sure.
wanted to learn. There are some of these kids who are like, I don't care to learn, I'm living my own fantasy,
right?
Where one of my favorite posts recently was when Anastasia announced that it was closing. One of the fans said, I think it's closing because they couldn't find someone as good as Christy Altomar to take over. And I was like, Christy Altomar is a phenomenally talented woman.
Uh-huh.
There are other phenomenally talented women.
Absolutely.
I guarantee you there was not a casting call and they were like, there's no one.
Right.
Close the show.
And also, not to, you know, and this is, God, come at me. But, I mean, nobody's going to see the show for Christy Altomar. People are leaving the show going, holy crap, she's incredible.
Yeah.
But no one's going, hey, I'm going to spend $85 or $120 on a ticket because this person is in there. That's stunt casting. And that gets into a whole different conversation,
sure.
which has the same ramifications,
well,
which is also cyclical.
And it's very rare these days that an actor in a Broadway show is famous for being in that Broadway show. A Patti LuPone and Evita kind of thing.
Right.
I would say Ben Platt and Evan Hansen is the most recent.
Yep.
And probably the only one within the last like decade where like
Lin-Manuel.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel and Hamilton. But that one for me was, I mean, they did a very good job when he would go out on talk shows and whatnot to be like, you wrote
right.
Hamilton.
Right, right,
not
right, right.
you're
the
in Hamilton.
Of,
yeah.
yeah. Sure,
and
sure.
they like brought everybody else out as well. And like Dear Evan Hansen's doing super well now that Ben Platt's gone, like still, but
right, not now that he's gone.
No, now that he's
even
gone,
though,
they're
even
doing
though
so
he's,
well.
even
no,
though he's
they're
gone.
Still doing well,
right.
even after he's left.
Right,
but that was a like when he was in the show, people went going like, this boy is supposed to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go see him. And same thing with, you know, Patty and Evita, and I'm trying to think of someone else who's like not a movie star, because I was going to say Glenn Close in Sunset, but that was different.
Well, Bernadette Peters came up in theater, technically.
Yes, yeah,
Dames at Sea. So.
That's a great example.
Right.
Let's go see this curly-haired, cleavage-y chest Beltress in an off-Broadway musical. That is what everyone said in 1968 to see Dames at Sea.
To see Dames at Sea.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
No, but I was thinking about the way over here, and I didn't want it to come off negative, but at the same time, I wanted to come off passionate and obsessively passionate about the fact that I just feel like, I guess the real kind of hook here is that if we ever learn the lesson, it won't matter, right? Because
sure.
Because, like you said, commerce is commerce, and every generation that comes up, once they see Wicked, I mean, let's just call it what it is. When they're younger, they see Wicked, they see Phantom, they see Lion King, they see whatever other Disney thing is on currently, Aladdin. And then once they move on from that, they want different. They want non-structured. They want Be More Chill. They want a Rent. They want a, you know, something that is a little bit more like Brassy. So we're always going to have that stepping stone in kind of the tween market that takes us from youthful theater into adult theater.
Sure.
And everyone's going to have that benchmark. So even if we stop complaining about it, it's still going to be there. Or even so, I guess it's an obsession that I'm going to always have until I'm literally Jerry Vicky's age.
Yeah.
Jerry Vicky's age. I don't know why Jerry Vicky is like...
I mean, you got to think about when you... You got to think about when you were a kid, the things that you were obsessed with. I literally, like, destroyed my parents' VHS watching Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast on repeat. Which, I mean, those are terrible examples because those are phenomenally made films.
Sure.
They're ultimate classics and
sure.
There's nothing childlike about them. They're just masterpieces, even today. But it was the gateway drug, so to speak, to Sweeney and Les Mis, and what's like super esoteric? I was gonna say Passion, but I don't like Passion. The Beba Depa, Carousel, and Showboat. Like,
right.
Like, it's, you know, if you love theater, you love all different kinds of theater. And I would say, I don't think that Broadway goes in cycles intentionally. I feel like things just kind of fall into place in a way that it's like unfortunate. I don't think it was planned that we were going to have as many jukebox musicals in the last 2 years as we did. I don't think all the producers were like, yes, let's... Oh, like, they don't want other jukebox musicals. They want to be the only ones. So that
sure.
way people will come to them.
Sure. Well, also, let's also uncover the whole thing about producing, which is if I think that Donna Summer's... A musical about Donna Summer can raise money to be the Donna Summer musical, then I will absolutely produce it. You know,
sure.
I mean, not me personally. I'm just saying as, like, a generic producer type.
Yes.
You know, the whole job of a producer is to... I mean, sure... There are absolutely producers like Daryl Roth and Jordan Roth and people that put their passion alongside their commerce and really believe in, Jordan is following up Frozen with Hadestown. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, look, that shows you that there is kind of a 50-50 wager there. Like, I'm going to wager on something brand new. I'm going to wager on something that is, you know, not possibly financially successful, and then wager and then not wager and bring in and book Frozen because
yeah.
it's going to be a gangbuster.
Yeah. That's how I feel about Scott Rudin. I mean, I'm sure he's a total dick, and the whole To Kill a Mockingbird licensing thing was very bad, but I've always given him credit for doing weird things like a Glenda Jackson King Lear
yeah.
or the Sam Gold Glass Menagerie and like do that alongside Hello Dolly with Bette Midler.
Right.
I had a friend who actually... he didn't end up... He had an opportunity to invest in Dolly, and he said he wouldn't because one of the things you had to do if you were going to invest in Dolly was you had to also invest in Glass Menagerie.
Yep.
And I was like, that is...
Clever.
You're super clever.
It's the Once on This Island getting the band back together mentality as well.
Yeah.
If you wanted to invest in Once on This Island, you had to invest in... I think. I'm almost positive. Don't take my word for it, and don't sue me, Ken Davenport. But I'm pretty sure it was a 2-for-1.
He has no... money to sue you with.
Ken's a good guy. Ken was my company manager on that Cinderella tour.
How was he?
Yes, he was.
I mean, so nice. I like him because it is very clear how passionate he loves theater and wants to try new things. I wish that he would talk to me about what he's going to produce next because I have thoughts and I literally have an outline for him for his next 5 years and I want to sit him down. And he'll be like, I'm sorry, who are you?
Right,
I'll be
of
like,
course.
And I'll be like, you're guardian angel. Now shut up and
right.
listen. But, yeah.
But again, like someone in his position, they make money from raising money for shows that other people are passionate, or they can sell passion on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you sell to Joan, who has a really rich husband who's, you know, Joan loves, Cher. So you go to Joan and you say, Joan, we're doing a Cher musical. And she's like, oh my God, I love Cher. Mm-hmm. You know, and you say you can go to opening night and you can possibly meet Cher. And oh my God, you've got $100,000 in your pocket.
Oh yeah.
You know, because Joan has money.
Joan is changing her major to
Cher. Joan is changing her major to Cher.
That was a fun home
reference. Joan's number is 555.
555555. No, I get that. I get that. One of the mob mentalities that always bugs me, because it's something that I love, is when people go, oh, we keep on reviving things. We're not doing enough new works. Speaking of Broadway, the Golden Age, there's a great back-to-back clip where Tommy Toon, God bless him, brilliant director, super smart man, says, we need to stop taking up space in these theaters for revivals. We need more new works. Cuts immediately to Elaine Stritch, who goes, I hate it when people say we shouldn't revive this. And I'm just sitting there laughing, going, preach, bitch.
Right.
And she's like, there's a whole generation out there that's never seen Guys and Dolls or any gadget. Right. I'm like, let them see it.
Right.
I mean, I think my issue with revivals is when directors go in and they're like, I'm smarter than the writers were in 1945, so I'm going to fix the show. Like, don't ever think you're going to fix the show. Thought process should be, how do I make audiences in 2019 feel the same way they felt in 1948 when this show came on?
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, this current Oklahoma does very much that. Makes you kind of sit there and go, huh. Have you seen it?
I did.
Okay. I'm assuming you're not a fan.
No, it's not that I wasn't a fan. It was a tricky evening for me because... Oh God, we're really doing this on.
Did you have another bad Uber driver?
Podcast. Yes, I took a horrible Uber driver. My thoughts on it are as follows. Oh God,
we can absolutely cut this out if you'd
We don't need to cut this out. No, let's talk about it, because I think it's interesting, because I feel like my energy was such that I was a huge fan of taking chances,
mm-hmm.
and really looking at this, like, stripping away. Like, okay, here's my thought. Oklahoma is one of the most negatively romantic musicals we have.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole, there's a romance, there's a lushness about it, but there's an undercurrent.
Yeah.
You take away all that romance and you still have that undercurrent. It's there whether you cake it on like Rodgers did or not. Like or Hammerstein, whoever decided to make it about kind of knowing that Laurie and Curly's kind of romance from Green Grows a Lilac needs to be the thing that we buy into as a musical, because otherwise it is a seriously negative thing.
There's a lot of drama.
It's an undercurrent. By taking out the kind of lushness and romance of the show, it left me with a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Some that it answered and some that it didn't. And the ones that it didn't, I was kind of like, oh, I wish you had answered those questions for me. That's how I felt about the take on the show.
Okay. I'm seeing it... in 3 weeks, so I'll let you know how I felt about it as well. But yeah,
it could change a little bit.
It could. It could just be, you know, small tweaks or actors being more lived in with it. Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals are very interesting to me because, and I talked about this on the podcast last year when I saw the Carousel revival. Hammerstein was an optimist,
mm-hmm.
but the shows he wrote with Rodgers had a darkness to them, which made the optimism more emotional, because it was sort of, if we can come out of the darkness starting to feel some hope, like, who knows what we can achieve.
Sure.
So, like, he would go into those dark valleys to come out with an optimistic outlook.
And you wonder if Rodgers picked those because he had been working with Hart so much, and Hart was a pessimist. I mean,
a huge pessimist. Well, yeah.
And just down on life in general. Yeah,
which is odd, because a lot of their shows are kind of happy-go, with the exception, I would say, Pal Joey. Like, Babes in Arms, Connecticut Yankee, even On Your Toes are, like, pretty just sort of, like, la-di-da kind of musicals.
That is also a circumstance of this of the period, though.
Sure.
Like, we were just coming out of, like, music hall vaudeville.
Yes.
You know, and it was hard to push a storyline. Like, Pal Joey was a rough storyline to push on people.
Yes. That is very fair.
Negative hero.
Yeah, but that is the anti-hero, but that is something that bothered me with the most recent Carousel, was they were like, oh, let's go as fast as we can, like, tempo wise let's go as fast as we can, let's cut any problematic text and just sort of make this nostalgic, you know, sweetness. I'm like, the show is dark. It is a dark show.
Sure.
and if you truly embrace it and treat these characters like people, complicated people, the show is very moving.
Sure.
But when you treat them sort of like stock musical theater types, then you're like, well, the show's about, you know, how it's okay to be violent to your wife. Right. And the show's about, you know, rape. It's like, that's, it's no, those are elements of the show, but that's not the show's stance on it.
Right.
So that's why I'm interested with this current Oklahoma.
And also, I did not see the Carousel revival. Mostly because I was such a fan of the Lincoln Center, yes. Nick Hintner one.
Nick, yeah. It's, I mean, that revival is canon. Is that the term people use? I don't know. It's like, that's the...
It's
the ultimate.
It's the ultimate, right.
It's the ultimate, yes.
Right.
Carousel is a huge show. It's a tricky show. It's probably top three hardest musicals to do well.
Mm-hmm.
People often think, well, if we sell the music and the dance, the show will survive.
Sure.
You really have to dig hard into those book scenes because it's there. The text is, it's great text. And having read Lilium and the Carousel libretto like back to back, seeing the work that Hammerstein did to it, I was like, this is phenomenal adapting right here.
Mm-hmm.
And just the tweaks he made. Because Lilium's a very, have you read Lilium?
I've never read Lilium.
Lilium's a weird play. Mm. It is, like, if you think Carousel's weird, everybody, check out Lilium. It is odd with a capital ooh. it is just so strange. But, like, there are certain moments that, like, Hammerstein takes out verbatim, but, like, moves where that moment is in the show. And the whole, like, essence of Lilium was just so nasty and negative. Like Molnar, Frederick Molnar, who wrote it, took a very negative stance about, you know, domestic violence and toxic masculinity with the play, and just like really kind of hits home just how awful Lilium is.
Mm.
And Hammerstein's libretto is more like everyone can technically be redeemed if like they eventually open up their heart. So it's the little tweaks he makes to the libretto to kind of get to that conclusion is very fascinating. But that's to say, you have to go and do the work there. And watching it, I was like, these actors could totally do the work if they were given the time. And I don't think they were given the time.
Yeah.
And I had a few people involved in the production who I talked with later on who confirmed more or less for me that not all of the time was spent on the text. It was more on like the dancing and the set changes and the costumes and the singing. And
I was like,
like, they cut so much book in that reproduction. And it was still almost 3 hours.
They cut a lot of book in Dolly, too, didn't they?
Did they? They added the pudding bit, which was not normally in the script.
I felt with the Dolly revival, I loved all of my friends in it. I felt like they cut book. It felt like almost like, to me, it sometimes felt like the highlights of Hello Dolly. It felt like we went from song to song.
Sure.
And it also could have been the fact that while I loved Bette Midler. Mm-hmm. There was no kind of arc. It was kind of like almost, and I don't know if it was, let me backtrack and say, I don't think it was a fault of Bette Midler's. I think it was a fault of the fact that she is someone who, when you're doing scene one to scene 18 in a two and a half hour evening, you've got to know what the growth is, what the arc is for the character, what you're bringing from scene one to scene two to scene two to scene three, what you bring from scene four back to scene two, so you carry, you know, you just need to know all your emotional luggage. I feel like she had been doing her concert circuit so much and and a kind of vaudeville kind of style that every time she came out, it felt like the same person appearing with new information, as opposed to someone who had already been through, you know, another monologue to, what's her husband's name? Ephraim,
yeah.
You know, another, like after the Ephraim monologue, I didn't feel like we got any broader look at who Dolly was, or even more focused look, whatever it is. Anyway, so that's how I felt about that, and that's why I think they thought they cut book because
I don't think they cut major chunks. They might have trimmed some lines here and there. I will say I did feel like we got from Yonkers to Manhattan very quickly. Yeah, because I had done the show and I remember feeling like that Yonkers was like a 15-minute section.
Yeah.
I mean, also, like, talk about fast tempos, everything on cocaine. Like, that production was like, bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. Well, Scott Rudin loves two and a half hours for a musical comedy.
Yes,
That's got to be it.
Yes, he do. I will say, I saw it with Bette the night before the Tony Awards, and it's one of the most electric audiences I've ever been in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which was fine, but, like, I was like, this is a lot of fun. I'm not loving it. I saw it again with Donna. I saw it with Donna Murphy.
Uh-huh.
Very different experience.
Yeah, sure.
She had that arc. And the audience did not start off the way they were with Bette.
Right.
But by the end of the show, they were.
Right.
And that was more moving. I finally understood why the title number gets the ovation it does. Because every time I'd seen it with Bette, when I did it, I was like, I don't get it. Like, this number is, like, fine. It's not great. And then with Donna, knowing what I knew about her with her husband passing and like how hard it was for her to come back to the stage to see her like literally rejoin the human race down those stairs. I was like, yes, babe. Remember eating any corn.
I have an audio recording, a live audio recording of Carol Channing doing that performance, and I have no idea who taped it.
Wait, of the 96 performance?
Of the 96 performance.
That is insane. You have a lot of things.
Yeah, I have a good archive.
You do.
I have a good archive.
How do you... Okay. Oh, God. I have feelings about archives and things that are not necessarily... As someone on both ends, as someone who is a passionate theater historian...
Sure.
And also someone who's been on Broadway a lot...
Sure.
How do you feel about that?
So I feel like I'm thrilled. I don't need I'm thrilled that archives exist.
Yes.
That's what I'll say. Because I don't think there should be any money gained from it. Mm-hmm. Because technically, if I'm in that performance, I was getting paid to do that performance, you were paying to see that performance, there should be no more money changing hands on anything. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel. I feel like people shouldn't make money from selling or gaining anything from that stuff. However, I will say that every time I think to myself, oh, there's someone filming in row three, that to me is more of a problem than someone who filmed the one time that Liza Minnelli went in and replaced Gwen Verdon in Chicago.
Yeah.
Thank God we have that on archives. You know what I mean? Like there's those moments where I go, or thank God that Theoni Aldridge or who's the other costume designer? Florence Klotz.
Klotz.
She had a camera and she had literally one of those old school Eyewitness News cameras and filmed. That's how we have
Follies. We have 50 minutes of footage of Follies.
And her whole closet was filled with VHS tapes or 8mm, you know, 8mm that were all of her things, and she was doing it to archive her costumes.
Yeah.
But in doing so, she archived some of the most incredible, momentous, unique performances in history. I wish that that we could figure. I mean, and Broadway HD is figuring it out. I wish we could figure out a way to make it a little bit more accessible without losing the uniqueness of Broadway and live theater. Because theater is theater. It's not television. It's not film. It's not meant to be filmed for that medium. So I'm so thankful for Lincoln Center that they archive everything. And I don't need 75 copies of Wicked with every single alphabet.
That's where it gets tricky for me.
Yeah.
Because I love that young theater fans are so passionate.
Yeah.
And like, they really do love these things with all their heart. And absolutely. That's wonderful.
Right. They wouldn't want to capture it if they didn't.
Yes.
Right?
I think there are healthier ways to channel that energy besides recording every time you go see the show, besides stalking sometimes performers or like finding out their phone numbers. I think there are healthier ways to do that. I'm also sort of like, once someone has preserved it in a very solid way, let's stop. Like, there's that bootleg of Drowsy Chaperone. I think it's like last week of previews, and it's from the mezzanine. It's the entire show. It captures everything. I'm like, great. There needs to be never a video of this show again.
Right.
Because that is perfect.
Right.
Weirdly, I actually prefer undocumented archival videos to archival videos.
Yeah.
Only because I actually think the energy of the show and the audience is more present in those.
Sure.
Like there's that very famous I'm gonna stop being PC here, the famous bootleg of Dreamgirls it's not great, super great quality, but you understand the energy of that show and from the audience watching it than you could have if it was like a multicam video.
You see why Michael Bennett was Michael Bennett.
Exactly. I mean, the completest
to me. Staging and you see the transitions.
Absolutely. Those amazing transitions. The completest me would have loved the multicam professional footage of it. So we could see like the fact that there's no complete video of the original act two opening of Dreamgirls devastates me.
Right.
Because they changed it and there's footage of that now, but not the original. Like, because that bootleg, the original bootleg comes in like 40 seconds into the opening, and I'm like, I want to see those first 40 seconds.
Yeah.
What were they?
Well, and I'll say, you know, just to clear my record on this, I am more a fan of, let me just put it this way.
Yes.
I'm more of a fan of archival footage that exists pre-1992 mm-hmm. or pre-1990.
Yes.
Because the advent of cell phones and cell phone cameras and mm-hmm. how easy it was to record stuff was not as available. So mm-hmm. it's more exciting to me to see shows that I never would have been able to see that I only yes. lived through the show, the recording of. But I will take this moment to say that recording of any kind is strictly prohibited, and you will be punished to the highest order if you are caught recording any Broadway shows. And I do not recommend doing it.
But if you have in your possession.
But if you do have a 1998 production of.
If you actually have the Lincoln Center recording of Smile on you, I would love to have it. Please send it to me.
I've been writing to Jodie Benson for years, and she won't give it to me.
You know she don't have it. You know she don't have it. She asked Howard Ashman at closing night, and he said, Jodie, no.
But I will say, you know what even is better than that, honestly? Well, not better than that, but equal to that is not the idea of illegally recording, but all the stuff that they did that is now appearing on YouTube, like the hour-long documentary on Smile.
Yeah.
About the guy who owned the football team who came in and was like, I love Smile. Yeah, I'm gonna go to Broadway.
We're going to give it the $3
million. That's great. And that's available right there on YouTube. And it has performances and it has B-roll technically in it, you know?
Yes, it does. You think I don't know about that documentary?
No, of course you do. Of course you do.
One of the most exciting things to me on YouTube ever is when they start that documentary and it's the piano chord that goes into Shine. It's the... Every time I hear it, I get so excited. Guys, it's such a good show. I've been petitioning Encores to do it for a year now.
Yeah, why wouldn't they?
I have no clue. I'm sending Jack Fertel an official letter this year to actually do it. After seeing Call Me Madam this year, which like was a perfectly fine production, and everyone in it's so fucking talented. Like Carmen Cusack could sing me my test results, and I'd be happy.
Obsessed with her.
And she should play Brenda in this Encore Smile. She would kill it. But I watched, I was like, I turned to my grandmother because she's who I see Encores with.
Yeah.
And I go, Nanny, it's time for Encores to do Smile. She goes, Matt, you've been saying that for 5 years ago, but I mean it now.
I love your nanny. I see her on your Instagram, right?
Yeah, Nanny. I have two grandmothers, Nanny and then Sally, who I call actual grandma. She, the one who just turned 95.
Oh.
She's a dear, but Nanny's 88. Nanny's who I saw Three Tall Women with. So there's a photo
amazing.
Of us. There's a photo of us together seeing Three Tall Women.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's a gem.
Email Casey Nicola or write Casey Nicola because he would actually be the
perfect, he's the perfect director for Smile. I did meet him. I met him through Tyler a little while ago, no. But I don't have his personal info. But what if I wrote Jack Fertel the letter and then found a way to forward it to Casey Nicola? I'd be like, you need to do Smile at
yes.
Encores. This is what I wrote Jack Fertel.
Yes.
You need to do it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. And it's so relevant to right now. And I did talk about this a year ago. So I'm sorry, John, I'm talking about it again. But if you read this, the libretto, the licensed one, the one that like Howard Ashman and Marvin Hamlisch were finally like, this is the version. This is the version of Smile we want out there. It is so prescient. Prescient is the word.
Mm-hmm.
To our current political climate, social climate, economical climate. Like, we are, like, Russia is back.
Yeah.
We have a Hollywood celebrity in the White House.
Right.
It kind of gives an indicator to the Me Too movement in terms of...
I was just going
to
say the Me Too of the pageant background and all. I mean,
oh, yeah. Everything. How these young girls become sexualized. And there's a great line where the choreographer is like, yeah, I took a bunch of sweet 17-year-old girls and turned them into showgirls. yeah. And I mean, he says it in a way, they're like, because they tell him, like, great job. Like, the pageant's great. He's like, yeah, took a bunch of sweet 17-year-olds and turned them into showgirls. Go me. And I don't know, like, in 1986, American audiences were very much on a high of, like, we're amazing. We don't like satire on things that we really love.
Right.
And I think we're able to kind of see that a bit more about ourselves.
Yeah.
It also very much calls into effect the racism of show business.
Oh, yeah.
The Maria Gonzalez character, I've said this before, she is the only ethnic contestant in the pageant, and she plays up her ethnic background to a stereotype and wins talent. And I'm like, that is such a commentary that these judges are like, oh my God, amazing.
Right. Right.
I love it. It needs to be done.
Oh my God, I need to go back and reread this. I read it in like, I think I read it in college as an assignment.
No, yeah, reread it and listen to the synthesizer demo. It's so good.
My good friend Karen used Disneyland as her audition song, so I knew that, of course, so well.
I mean, back when I was still auditioning, but the last year of auditions, I did Disneyland. And I got to tell you, I got a call back every single fucking time.
Magic Kingdom.
Magic Kingdom, Disneyland.
And when I went on the road and Jamie Lynn Sigler, who was at that time from The Sopranos,
doing Cinderella.
Did Cinderella. We did a cabaret and she sang Disneyland as well. Oh, she was great. She was so sweet. God. She is sweet. She's so sweet.
Yeah.
Where do we go?
Where do we go from here? I mean, that is what your obsession was talking about. Audience is saying, where do we go from here?
Right.
I mean, I'm telling you, we're reviving Smile.
Correct.
What are you telling me?
That we just used an Evita lyric and a Dreamgirls lyric as two transitional statements. That's what I'm going to tell you.
So what happens now?
I don't, you know, I mean, I think what's going to happen is, I think if you ask me, I think Tina will be probably the last we see of biomusicals for a while. Maybe 10 or 12 years or 15 years. I think we're going to see a whole like slew of original crazy musicals coming in because of people like Jordan and Daryl. Mm-hmm. And also like Hal Luftig and, you know, producers that are willing to take a chance, and Scott, mm-hmm. you know. So I hope all that happens. And you know, you have Rodgers and Hammerstein is a brand. And so they're going to push a revival every couple years. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting is they're going to lose their copyright soon and all that stuff. So that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But so depressing. Or maybe it's not. Maybe it opens up the universe for people to do more things with that and not feel the pressure of heritage or legacy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a double-edged sword for me, because for every like Nick Heitner who goes in and's like, what if we open the show at the Mill instead of at the Carousel?
Right.
We have Eva Van Hoff, who's like, what if it all takes place in a litter box?
Right.
And I'm just like, what?
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
I haven't seen a lot. If you named a lot of shows that have been the past 12 years, I probably haven't seen them. Because I just feel like once people tell me about them.
You also been working a lot.
Yeah, that's true. But we do get, you know, I got to say, we do get a lot of free tickets. Broadway gets a lot of free tickets. That's the nicest thing about being in a Broadway show.
I want to be on Broadway now.
It's so great because the other general managers, if they're opening a mm-hmm. show, they'll figure out what day you're dark on.
Yeah.
And Beautiful was dark on Monday nights and Wednesday nights. So if there was ever like a preview on a Monday, great. Mm-hmm. If there was ever like a full-fledged show on Wednesday, tickets all around.
Love it.
I saw a lot of stuff.
That's amazing.
They all just saw the Ain't Too Proud Invited Dress last week.
Yes.
Because half the cast is from Beautiful.
That is true.
A lot of them are.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, as am I. I don't know how we got into that, but oh, I feel the same way about Pretty Woman. I haven't seen it yet.
Right.
And I've seen clips and I know what everyone in the cast sounds like.
Yep.
I've heard a couple of songs and I know the movie very well.
Yep.
I feel like I've seen the show already.
I will also say there's something absolutely valid in saying I'm not the audience for that theater, for that show, you know, and I'm not the audience for Pretty Woman. Mm. Then that is not a negative. That's not a positive. No. That is not, they're not directing their advertising at someone like me who is hell or high water musical theater mm. without the brand or with the brand. And that is a branded property that is saying, hey, you know, Pretty Woman to me is the kind of show that says, hey, you love the movie, you'll love the musical.
Yeah.
Great. That's a perfect sales pitch. It's a perfect sales pitch to, you know, Aunt Frida in Long Island, who knows nothing about, who loved Phantom of the Opera, you know, and every Tuesday night watches Law and Order.
That was great acting.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
Law and Order. But doesn't really buy into musical theater. That's the greatest pitch for her, because she goes, oh my God, loved Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
So I'm going to love Pretty Woman the musical.
Sure, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I will say,
Do they do the Pearls bit? Great.
Amazing,
you know? Yeah. Like, and that goes great tie back into my obsession, is that there's always room for those, for shows like Pretty Woman.
Sure.
There's room for, you need sugar in your diet. You know what I mean? Like, Pretty Woman is sugar. It's a fun night out of the theater. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm all of a sudden like a salesman for Pretty Woman, but it's a good example.
I apologize. I brought
it's
it
a
up.
Good example. No, it's a good example. It's like, it's Pretty Woman there is a market for Pretty Woman, especially for people who have seen Wicked, who have seen Phantom, who have seen Evita for the third time, who have seen, you know, they want to see something different. And, you know,
I am, if I can find myself an affordable ticket, or a real ticket, and I just happen to be, you know, with a bank account that can afford such one.
Yes.
I have no problem seeing things like Pretty Woman or Ain't Too Proud or Wicked, only because every piece of theater that you see, if you are a theater goer, if that is something you love to do, if seeing theater, it helps inform you.
Yeah.
And your, every theater you see helps inform your taste more,
yeah,
whether you like it or don't like it.
Right.
You can go into something thinking I'm not the right audience for it. You can also be wrong when you walk out of the theater. There are times where I walked into shows being like, I don't think I'm going to like this.
Yeah.
And I walked away such
blown
a fan.
Away.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I remember, like, when I saw Fun Home at the Public, I knew very little about it.
Yeah.
I knew it was Janine Tesori, who I love, but I had heard it was based off a graphic novel, and I was like, oh, I don't like graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went up being like, well, maybe. I wasn't, like, nasty, but I was like, maybe.
Yeah.
And then I walked out going, that was the best thing I've seen in years.
Yep.
And then saw it on Broadway, and even on Broadway, I was like, will it be as good as At the Public? And it was even better.
Mm-hmm.
I love shit like that. So yeah. I will go see Pretty Woman. I would love to have my mind change. I have an unfair, premeditated opinion on the show just based off of what I've seen and what I know and what I know of the movie.
Sure,
having seen the movie many
sure.
times.
Right.
I would love for them to change my mind. You made the prediction that you don't think we're going to see many bio jukebox musicals in the future. What are some trends just from, like, insider scoop, without giving too much away, from some insider scoop you've seen of, like, workshops and readings? What do you think could be a trend that we can all expect?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to get a few, you know, we're going to continue to get, I mean, I'm not saying there won't be any bio musicals, but I think there will be lesser than we've seen. We've certainly seen an onslaught of them
sure.
since the beautiful, you know, since the beautiful, not even beautiful before that, you know, it's been an onslaught. I think we're going to get back into a cycle where we see a few movie musicals,
mm-hmm.
you know, because now we have these movie houses who have theatrical producers attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have theatrical producers actually mining the libraries of
yeah.
these places. I think we're going to see some interesting things import. I think we're going to hit, I hope we're going to hit a diversity peak. Not a peak, but I hope we're going to hit so far what
yeah.
will be our peak in the next five to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see some, and I'm not talking Bombay Dreams, like the one, you know, hit that just happens to have, you know, mostly Middle Eastern or, you know, or ethnic cast. I think we're going to see a lot of that coming up, which excites me, because also that's another way to do revivals
yeah.
is to look at why Josh Henry is interesting as that role, but in a larger way.
Yeah.
So I think we have that coming up. I think we have, but and no matter what you have coming up, people are going to complain. People are going to say, we have too many movie musicals. We have too many bio musicals.
We have too many revivals.
We have only 50 houses and 50% of them are filled.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we're only seeing 25 new things every year,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, and don't quote me on that statistic, but it's something like that.
Numbers.
Right. What we need is we need a new theater.
We need
the Schuberts to actually build a theater where they were supposed to next to the Imperial, but oh
yeah.
Well.
What happened there?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
There was another big rumor that Disney was going to build its own theater as opposed to leasing
The New Amsterdam.
No, staying in this. Well, they have a 100-year on New Amsterdam.
Yeah,
but like taking away the Frozen in the Jujamsen or
yeah.
something in the Lentfontaine or something, you know.
Yeah,
and actually opening a Broadway house.
Yeah,
I don't. I have mixed feelings about that, but.
I mean, I'm all for just some new theaters in general. I mean, we did just get the Hudson 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but like,
oldest and newest.
What?
Have you taken the tour?
I have not taken the tour.
Take the tour.
Okay.
Today Tix does a tour. I'm not pushing it because I have no affiliation with them, but.
No skin in the game?
No skin in the game. But I was looking for skin in the game. Hey-o, I said foreskin.
Stuffing Shelly and foreskin. This is. Weirdly become the dirtiest episode of Broadway Breakdown.
Really?
I'd probably.
Doubtful.
We talk, yeah. John and I, when we get together, we talk about bottoming a lot.
Ayo!
Kevin's face has gotten very weird.
Also an obsession. So.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. So, I think we need new theaters, but I think my obsession with the fact that we complain about the cycles is that it will always happen because we are cyclical and there's going to mm-hmm. be people that always just pat out the fact that do we need another this? Do we need another that? Well, it's not your choice because you're a single ticket buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have the intelligence or the education to stand back and look at what the grand scope of Broadway is, that we need Chicago on Broadway. We need that revival to keep running because it's going to bring in people for that don't normally come to New York to see that revival. And then they're going to see something else and they're going to buy a ticket to something else because of that. We don't need Chicago in general. I mean, I'm just saying we need that slot filled is what I'm saying.
What I've just heard.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that I need to gain enough power that I can make these decisions.
Yes.
And I decide what goes into theaters and what gets written.
Right.
So mark it now. I'm not going to say a year from now. I'm going to be realistic and say a year and a half from now. I'm going to have enough power that I kill any musical or play I don't want. We'll get shows to close that have been there for years.
Ah.
We're going to get new things. I've been waiting for, like, Schindler's List, the ballet.
Oh,
Sophie's
God.
Choice, the opera.
Uh-huh.
But I want like, a Sophie's Choice, like, Les Mis. I want inappropriate singing when, you know, people are dying, and I want a turntable. I want a light tower like Dreamgirls. It's going to be amazing. Anywho, so we'll wrap this up. Where can people find you on the interwebs, Kevin?
I'm at Kevin Dudegrim on Instagram, mm-hmm. and I'm at Kevin Dude on Twitter.
All right, you do have Twitter.
I don't have Twitter.
I forget who has Twitter because I don't have Twitter.
So I don't, I'm not, I came over to the Instagram side more so, but same. I still like Twitter.
We always end the episode with a Broadway diva to sing us out.
Oh.
Yes, I'm not going to tell you who we've had. I'd like you to give me a choice and then I'll say yes or no based on whether we had them or not.
Oh my gosh. A Broadway diva to sing us out.
Mm-hmm.
How about, how about Lori, original Evita cover? Lori Ackerman.
Lonnie Ackerman.
Lonnie Ackerman. There we go.
Cut
that out.
Okay.
Please cut that out. Please cut that out.
No, I'm going to keep that. Lonnie Ackerman. Okay. I have an audio that I, not of her in Evita, but I've, do you have audio for an Evita?
I don't think I do.
God damn it. The one thing you're good for. Lonnie Ackerman. I think I can get audio of her from Sophisticated Ladies. Yeah. She'll, no, not Lonnie Ackerman. That's Terry Klausner, Sophisticated Love.
Right,
I
don't, right.
No, that's what I was thinking of, Terry Klausner. Lonnie Ackerman, I can totally find audio.
Yeah, please. Lonnie Ackerman has a ton of things.
She's all over YouTube,
yes,
with that. Okay.
She is.
Okay, she has a second G in A New Argentina. I think that's what we'll play. Has that always been your catchphrase?
No. I don't know why I'm using it. Probably because, like, it's probably, like, Jerry Vicky.
Jerry and Vicky.
Lonnie Ackerman.
All right. So this has been Broadway Breakdown. I'm Matt Koplik.
I'm Kevin Duda.
And
I was also supposed to say that.
You.
Where's John? I've never met John.
You don't need to meet John.
Okay.
No one ever has to meet John.
All right.
John has been very busy doing a series with the Stage Network, and then he also is doing a developmental lab.
Oh,
yeah. So making that those percentages
nice,
now. Thank
nice.
You, Equity. At least I think it's a developmental lab. I don't know. He said it at one point what it was, and that's how I interpreted it. So, I don't know. But he will stop being MIA very shortly. You'll have him back very soon, guys. Stick with it. In the meantime, this has been a more informative episode, a more intelligent episode.
Yes.
Sorry, not sorry, John. And this is Lonnie Ackerman. Take us away, Lonnie.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.